It was a good thing we didn't do it at my place. Just before I left, like six people showed up, and it was chaos, and the kids trying to nap upstairs. Yeah. Yeah. My wife had a production meeting for this thing.
But we have found ourselves at the Continental at the corner of 27th and Main Street in Vancouver. Why the Continental?
Because it's convenient to my home, and they have good coffee here.
And they know you here. They like you.
Yeah, I get. I don't get sneers when I walk in. I get familiar smiles.
Excellent. Listen, on this date in rock and roll history, in 1978, Van Halen released their first single. Do you remember what it was?
Bad for Teacher? I don't know.
No, it was Kink's Song.
Keg Song?
Kinks.
Kinks? I don't know that
song. You really got me. Okay, fine. So you weren't into Van Halen. Because
no.
I was going to ask you, are you a David Lee guy or a Sammy Hagar?
Oh, I would say David Lee.
Diamond Dave.
Diamond Dave. It's got to be Dave.
For the show?
Well, he's got personality. I don't know. I feel like it got soft with Sammy, didn't it? I don't even know.
Okay. All right. Soft with Sammy. We've come to talk about Club Meds, which is your latest offering. But I wanted to go back just a bit before I forget to do this. I see you're nominated for two Canadian Screen Awards, along with your pal Jesse Zubat for Hector and The Search for Happiness, a movie that you had high hopes for. We all did. And it came and went in a blink of an eye.
It certainly did, yeah.
But how long did you work on that music?
We worked on it for a long time, on and off for about a year, and then the last month was really intense. The last month was just like all day, every day. Yeah, it was interesting because that movie it got just crushed by the critics. They did not like it at all. But it's funny because I actually, and I think from a fairly objective standpoint, as much as I can, I actually don't think it deserved
it
that.
It didn't.
Yeah, like I think that it was maybe the wrong time or something.
Well, actually,
like that.
You took the words right out of my mouth. I think it was timing. Mm. There were a lot of movies coming out at that time, and it just got buried.
Yeah, and it's sort of, it's a sweet movie. It's kind of a tender movie, and it has these moments of sort of John Hughes-esque whimsy. Or
maybe it becomes a cult film.
Maybe. Yeah, that would be nice. I don't know. I feel proud of the music. You know, I feel like Jesse and I accomplished what we were trying to do, which was to try and to do something that we enjoyed, but at the same time sort of pleased the creative interests of the party involved and a lot of people involved in a film. You know, it's not your baby anymore. It's somebody else's baby, and you're kind of a cog in the wheel.
So there's an extended version of Vessels on the soundtrack. Was it already written and you brought it in, or did the soundtrack inform Vessels?
It was symbiotic. I was working on stuff for the film, and I kind of demoed this tune, Vessel, that was kind of created amongst that stuff. I played it for the director, Peter. He loved it. He really wanted to be in the film. So it kind of became like a thematic thing that came and went throughout the film. But I told him right up front, I said, I know I have to have this for my album too. So as long as it can be for both. And he said, yeah, whatever. So
it's an extended version. Does it have Dave Grohl in it?
Yeah, it does. So
was he just hanging out in the studio?
No. Well, the director, Peter, is quite good friends with Dave Grohl. And so we went down to L.A. and we showed Dave the movie and he liked it. And we asked him, you know, if he'd do some singing, and that song kind of made the most sense. It had this big kind of screamy Dave Grohl-esque chorus part, which was perfect for him, and he killed it. He was amazing. And in fact, the extended film version of the song has, I think Dave's vocals are a little less processed, there's less reverb on them, and they're a little cleaner. So it actually sounds more Grohl-ish on the film version than it does on the record.
Grohl-ish.
Yeah, it's a little
Grohl-esque. Grohl-esque.
But he's amazing. Dave was, you know, he cameos on things all the time. You know, he's really clear that, like, you know, the way that he can cameo on stuff all the time is by keeping a low profile. So, you know, this is not a Dan Mangan featuring Dave Grohl thing. This is sort of like a those in the know Dave's on the thing. So.
All right. So, and I want to play Vessels to kick off this special.
The album version?
Well, that's just it. It's your call. I think you'd want people to maybe hear the album version?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the album version is it's more succinct. It's more kind of compact. The film version has this long, meandering, like 2.5-3 minute acoustic sort of intro to it. And we actually re-recorded the song. It's interesting. We re-recorded the song for our record because we felt like we just wanted a slightly different feel or vibe to the recording. a little bit less kind of classic straight rock. And then we just planted Dave's vocals right over top of it. And because we played it at basically the same tempo, it kind of worked fine. But let's go with the album version. It sounds better to me.
Okay, can we say, I'm speaking with Dan Mangan, and we're talking about his and Blacksmith's album, Club Meds, and Blacksmith is, it's so important.
Yeah, it is. It's Kenton Lowen, Gordon Gardena, John Walsh, and J.P. Carter, and Jesse Zubat, and Tyson Naylor, and those are all the guys that played on this record. I've been playing with these guys for years. It's not a new batch of guys, but it was sort of, it made sense for us to combine forces in a sort of new way on this record. We'd taken some time away from all the crazy touring that we'd been doing. And, you know, there was a new emphasis, a new sort of vibe. And I feel like we would have given the band a name a long time ago if we had sort of had the will or we were just busy, you know. It was really, we were distracted doing all the things that we were doing, so we didn't have time to reorient it.
Well, for guys, it may be just a name, but it's a vast difference because all of a sudden they have an identity.
Mm-hmm. And they get to be in the photos, you know. It was weird showing up to a venue and it would just be my face on the poster, you know, and it would be my name on the marquee. But, you know, we felt like a band, and I think the guys felt like they were in a band, and it was sort of like this constant slight to them that they weren't getting their credit. And the fact is that they've been an integral part of this project for a very long time.
And you did it together.
And we did it together.
It says music by the guy, you and the guys, lyrics by you, except for Gardena, who does his own tune?
Yeah, so there's one track on the record called A Doll's House Pavlovia, where Gordon had written A Doll's House, this tune. I just thought it was a beautiful song. And so I wrote this counter melody to it, and we both kind of sing back and forth throughout the whole thing. And, you know, the new process for me. I'd never really done that before. Kitsch was another one. Johnny wrote the bass line. So all the music of that tune wasn't mine. You know, that was a really interesting thing to sort of... I've never co-written anything. I mean, there's songwriters out there who go on these writing retreats, and publishers put them off, and they try and write hits with other people, and... I'm not against it. I would be open to that. But I've just not, something I've never done. I've never co-written anything in my life. So,
well, there's energy within the group.
Mm-hmm. There's energy within. It's like a family, you know.
Well, you don't have to explain yourself.
Yeah. Well, and we love each other, and we drive each other totally fucking crazy, you know. And so there's all those dynamics that happen in a family that that familiarity, that trust, that sort of love. It feels right, and it's the guys. I've learned so much from them. You know, touring with them over the years, they're much better musicians than I am. And you know, it's not to say that I'm not bringing something unique from my point of view to the table, but just in terms of playing, I get to play music with these guys. They're world class, incredible, experimental musicians.
Is it possible that it freed you up a little bit to concentrate on other things?
I mean, I think that it's given me a bit of freedom to dig into what I do, you know. It's sort of like, if I'm not carrying the band, if I'm not saying, okay, here's the song, guy, you play along, but sort of saying, okay, let's create this sound bed together, and then it frees me up to say, okay, what do I want to say on top of this, and really focus on these lyrics, and really focus on sort of, you know, orchestrating something that's new and interesting. I'm not into throwback music. I don't like the idea of, I'm not big on nostalgia in general. I don't like the idea that we used to have better music than we do, or we're trying to recreate something that used to be better than it is now. I think that if we were to go back in time, the people back then would feel the exact same way we do now. And that's, you know, this denial of the moment, denial of the present as being worthwhile, because the present is, it's the only thing that's actually real. The past is this hypothetical sort of foggy haze just as much as the future is.
Are you saying Bob Dylan is a foggy haze?
Bob Dylan's a lot of things. But, you know, like, he's a legend. He's epic. But, you know, if you go back in time, people will be like, oh, yeah, well, he's just doing Woody Guthrie. You go back and, you know, it's like everything is cyclical. And I think what you do is you take the influences and the beauty of what happened in the past, and you try and funnel that through the present, and you try and let that live now.
It's interesting verbiage that we have here, because in your very own release with this album, it references a blonde redhead, Steve Reich, Peter Gabriel, Radiohead, artists from the past. Mm-hmm. I guess because it's the only way they can say, well, if you like them, perhaps you'd like this. Do you see? Did you agree with that?
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like there's an element to the nature of the sonic texture that kind of suits all of those various reference points. And I think, you know, when you're writing a bio, you need to give journalists something to go on. I think that's really the heart of it. You know, they need an angle. They need
a great unwashed.
And so, you know, I think that that's sort of, if we didn't include any reference points, then people would be like, what is this? You know, then I'd be explaining what it sounds like to everyone.
The more I listen to the album, the more I can see you showing up on jazz festivals.
Interesting.
Because of the riffs, because of the way the band is cooking underneath all of this stuff. You have to listen for it, but it's there.
I think a lot of people find this record chaotic at first. You know, they maybe feel a little bit like, whoa, it's just an onslaught of sound. And the deeper you get into it, the more, I think if you give it some time, all of this stuff that seems sort of just chaotic actually is very meticulously placed, and yet it feels human. It's like this, there's a juxtaposition on this record of the sort of robotic self and the human self, and the human has to win, it has to come through. But there's sort of this, you know, these imperfect, frail human performances that are very improvisational. You know, Gore doesn't write necessarily guitar parts, he just plays, you know, and he falls into this similar thing most of the time because that's what repetition does. But every time we play these songs, it's slightly different. And these recordings, these bed tracks, are all live off the floor. You know, we're not writing huge guitar hook melodies to come in and overdub. He just does it. And the thing is, it doesn't sound like a hook until the third time you listen to it, and you'll be humming that fucking guitar line for the rest of the week.
You know, I have to tell you, there's no power ballad here.
There's no power ballad. Yeah, that's true. And there's no kind of robotsy sing-along, you know?
You knew that when you made the decision early on to change direction, and you have changed direction with this album, Club Meds, that there would be flack, or there would be questions, or you would have to answer that question over and over again. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're going to do it anyway. Do you want to bring this audience along that you just... Right?
It's funny, my manager has said, you know, you're going to need to shepherd people into this era rather than smack them in the face with it and say, you know, if you don't get it, screw you. And that's totally true. And I, you know, we're still going to play old stuff at the concerts. We're still, you know, I'm not a different person. I'm the same person. It's just, you know, the thing is, I don't feel like this record is as weird as people are saying it is, but that's because I'm in it. You know, I'm on the other end of it where I know it, you know, intimately enough that it doesn't feel as jagged or sort of off the wall as I feel like some of the reviews have said that it is. So I don't know. I feel like if you give this record time, the songs will start to make sense. They won't sound as experimental because they'll start to fall into place. And I'm really proud of the lyrics. And I just think it's the best, most artistic piece of musical work I've ever been a part of.
I wrote down somewhere here, and I forget which track it was. And it was, oh, hang on a second, I got it right here. Hold on. Please hold. I'm your editor, by the way. Is it Off-Red?
You'd have to ask Margaret Atwood. I don't know. I say Off-Red.
Off-Red. Well, I introduced it as Off-Red, and somebody called me on it. Okay, Off-Red. There's a lot of "They Changed My Purpose." I put faith in Mayday, but it didn't feel right. "They Changed My Purpose." Who's they?
They is the sort of New World Order in the book Handmaid's Tale. So Offred is the protagonist in that book. So it's all from her perspective.
So it's none of your fault, it's hers.
Well, I'm singing from her perspective. Yes. You know, and that's a very audacious thing to sing from you know, it's like for a white male to sing through a woman's voice, or I don't know. But in the book, you know, she goes from being a person of choice, of freedom, to being a sex slave, basically. And you know, they, this new world order, this sort of religious sort of force that revolutionized the world, has changed her purpose. And so, I mean, that's a very literal interpretation. You know, it's sort of that's a particular reference in that song.
And Dan Mangan, Club Meds, A Doll's House. I love the line, "Young smoked out voice against the setting sun." I immediately thought of Angus Young from AC/DC.
Oh, really?
But then, well, I thought of Neil Young.
See, Gord wrote that line. That's Gord. That's Gord's tune right there. So
did he say who Young was?
He. This is funny. It's kind of personal, but he was. This song is kind of about a girl, and she had a very particular voice.
I see.
So she had a very unique and very recognizable voice, So I think that that's what he's referencing.
Okay, fair. Rather than me choose these tunes, tell me the ones that you can't wait to play on stage.
Well, there's tunes. I'm really proud of the tune 16. It's sort of based on these images in my head. One was during the Occupy movement. You know, you have these sort of camping, dirty, unshowered, you know, angry activists in the park, and then you have the bankers going to work across the street, mostly unfazed. I mean, they, you know, the recession came and went, and they got their bailout, and you know, I'm sure the bailout was just part of their business model. You know, it's sort of like they carried on, and the sort of dichotomy between those two worlds reminded me of the French Revolution and Marie Antoinette and Louis XVI kind of chilling out, Max in Versailles, taking it easy. And they have no idea what's going on. They're so disconnected from
that
the French
didn't
people.
End well.
No, it didn't end well. If you raise a child and you tell them you are privileged, you deserve everything you want, you get all this stuff, you have opulence beyond measure, and these other people who are out there, they don't get it because they're not worth as much as you are intrinsically. Well, what are you going to do? You grow up in that world. You're just going to do what's next. You know. I think that's the thing is both sides demonize the other. And it's like, you know, people use the word class war. I don't even think it's war. I just think it's class chaos. Like, you know, if you are of the privileged, you demonize, you look at dirty people and you think they don't work as hard as you. And if you are of the unprivileged, you look at privileged people and you think that they're unhuman and they're monsters and they're evil because they're, you know, they're just wasting and selfishly consuming.
I guess the truth is somewhere in the middle.
The truth is everything. It's all perspective. And so this song is kind of it's a letter home from a Wall Street banker. You know, the crash has come and his family writes him and they say, you know, is it true? Like, did you guys just screw us over here? Is this what, you know, the news is just keeps saying how Wall Street totally screwed us. And the banker's saying, yeah, absolutely, we totally did. We'll continue to do it because that's how we do it. But I'm still a person and I'm doing what I'm just trying. I'm just trying everything I can to keep moving forward. And, you know, it's sort of a comment on how it's really hard for society to look long term or to plan really that in-depthly because the fault of the individual is always to take the carrot that's in front of them. And I think that that's what people are doing every day. They're taking the carrot directly in front of them, and how can you blame them? That's just what they're doing. That seems to be the best option. And yet, every moment of the day, people are just taking the next action that seems like the best option.
This is 16 from Club Meds. The title track, I'd play it anyway because it's the title track, Club Meds. The line in there that jumped out at me was, I want to be sedated, and I thought of Joey Ramone.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Yeah, I mean, it's funny. On every record, I've referenced another writer. I referenced Bob Dylan on one, and I referenced Leonard Cohen on one. There's always like it seems like on each record I've done, there's been a little tagline in there that's just like a throwback to someone else. That song's about wanting to be sedated. It's about coping, you know. I think that living is difficult, and so we cope in different ways. Some of those ways are healthy. You know, you can't take the woes of the world on your shoulder. You need to live, you know, you need to find joy, and at the same time you need to be honest with yourself and you need to accept the dark as well as the light. And so that song's kind of about coping. I had this image in my head of a, you know, tourist with their head in the sand, literally and figuratively, and their arm raised up above them with an IV just keeping them alive, you know. And it's sort of, you know, this haze where we keep postponing sort of revelation or leveling with ourselves or you know, dealing with things that we know we need to deal with because we can't. And so we just sedate and we kind of live in this weird middle ground. We don't face the dark. We don't face the light. Do I feel like our society is over-medicated? Sure. You know, but this isn't a war.
But I have an excuse.
That's right. You've got a broken knee. But yeah, you know, like I'm not trying to start a war with the pharmaceuticals or anything. I'm just commenting on, you know, I have a coffee in my hand. What does the band do when we have a day off on tour? We get drunk. You know, it's like we all do it. We cope in different ways. I think part of it is just like we're bored.
Do you see yourself as a troublemaker? Do you have that in you?
You know, as a kid, I was never a troublemaker. I was always like I played it safe. I wasn't jumping out of trees and stuff like that. My mom describes me as a kid with a sense of self-preservation. But I don't know. I feel now a willingness to be more of a troublemaker lyrically.
You have a platform.
Yeah, and I think that's part of it. I think I spent 3 records trying to get a seat at the table. I just wanted a place in music. And then I sort of sat back. I had a break. I had a kid. You know, everything, you know, I had some time to think about what I was doing, why I was making music.
When you got to that seat at the table, you said, well, now what?
Yeah, exactly. You know, I have a seat at the table. We can sell tickets. We can be on the radio. It's like, that's unbelievable. That's a friggin' miracle.
You can be on Mulligan Stew.
I get to be on Mulligan Stew. I grew up watching TDM, you know?
I played Van Halen over and over again, and it never got through to you. Here's the deal. You're going to have to tour this album. Will it require anything special musically?
Well, we are going to have a bigger kind of lights and visual presentation than ever before, which is pretty cool. It's going to require some rehearsal, I'll say that. It's a complicated record, and so I think what we're trying to do is find that middle ground between recreating the record and also saying, you know, screw the record. We're just going to try and play these songs in the way that they seem right and let them live on their own aside from the record.
Will you do that thing that some artists do of saying, you're here for the new, I'm going to play the new record and then I'll play the hits for you?
Yeah, I think we'll probably combine it. We'll mix it up a little bit. But I'd be lying if I said I wasn't most excited about the new material. But also, you know, like I cannot take for granted the fact that people have connected to some of my work, you know? And so do I want to play a lot of those old tunes for people too? Yeah, absolutely. So it's going to be a matter of what we can fit into a set. And, you know, I think people can expect a bunch of old tunes.
So Blacksmith is going out on the road with you, but who else will you take? Jesse?
Actually Jesse Zubat won't be on the road. He's too busy with Tanya Tagak right now. We'll have J.P. Carter, we'll have Tyson Naylor, Kenton Gord and Johnny, and myself. And Hayden is supporting. That's a miracle, too. I spent all of university just going crazy on Hayden records. So, you know, I can't even believe that he's coming on tour with us.
And the guys that you signed to your label?
And Astral Swans as well, yeah, Calgary's own. We're putting out Astral Swans' debut record on my little record label, Matic Records, in February, and he's going to come out as the first of 3 and, you know, play 20, 30 minutes a night, and it's great. What a gift. I feel very lucky and very excited to get out there and play shows again.
For your information, Dan Mangan and Blacksmith will be in Banff on... How is it? It's the 9th. March 9th, right?
March 9th in Banff.
March 9th, they will be in Banff at the Eric Harvey Theater. March the 10th at the Jack Singer in Calgary. And March the 11th in Edmonton at the Windspear. 9, 10, 11 in Alberta. What about festivals? Do you know what your festival will be like?
I think we are beholden to announcements that festivals do. I don't think we're supposed to talk about festivals until they announce it. So, but we will be doing a handful of festivals across Canada that I know so far. I think it's, you know, we have a new record. It's all systems go. Just play as much as we can everywhere.
What's the merch look like?
Oh, you know what? We've got some toques.
Wow.
Yeah, going Canadian on this. And we've got some hats, some crew neck sweaters, and some t-shirts, some silkscreen posters. It's looking good.
No keychains?
No keychains.
No picks?
No picks.
But toques?
But toques. We'll keep you warm.
Wow. You know, there's some nights you'll make more in merch than you will at the door.
Most nights, maybe. We'll see.
All right. Are you happy with your lot in life?
You're dealing
with, well, where am I going to live when I come back?
Yeah.
All of those things, but are you happy with what you've created? Because you set this in motion.
How could I not be? I quit my day job. That's a miracle. It's great. You know, that's amazing. I worked in a restaurant for a lot of years. I don't have to do that anymore. I'm the luckiest guy in the world.
What's your website?
DanManganMusic.com.
You have a Twitter handle?
DanManganMusic.
Instagram?
DanManganMusic.
Facebook?
DanManganMusic.
Have I forgotten anything?
Thank you, Terry, for your ongoing support and your love for Canadian music.
You're more than welcome. It's a pleasure to play the music. Club Meds, Dan Mangan, Blacksmith. Now in your hands. Go find it. This is Mulligan Stew, CKUA.